Enjoy it, buddy, so much. Good morning. I no longer suffer from insanity. I enjoy every minute of it. I want to talk to you about alcoholism today. I want to several remarks in an introductory fashion. Number one, please don't go away from here saying that I said drunkenness is not a sin. Been accused of that occasionally. It is a sin. I know it's a sin because it's condemned in the Bible. Proverbs is full of references to the dangers of wine and strong drink. The New Testament has an awful lot of verses condemning drunkenness. Ephesians chapter 5, be not drunk with wine, but be filled with the Spirit. Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs and so forth. First Corinthians 6:10, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, etc., 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 shall inherit the kingdom of heaven. So it's all over the place condemning drunkenness. So it is a sin. In the case of the alcoholic, the sin soon becomes insanity. I know. And I want to talk a little bit about addiction. Since I'm doing the talking, I'm the one that gets to define the word addiction. Addiction means you have to have a substance or you have withdrawal symptoms. The mildest form I can think of now is coffee. Rose and I, especially me, I drink a lot of coffee. And you don't want to be around me if I don't get my coffee because I have a headache and I'm hateful. Any of you have that? Some of you do. That's a mild addiction. I don't go rob banks, though, because I'm addicted to coffee because I don't feel good. Those of you that have had addictions to tobacco realize how hard it is to get away from that and how nervous you are and bad you are if you don't get your nicotine. It's a little bit more severe. Some of the hard drugs, especially the opiates, addiction is terribly, terribly strong. So that if you take the drug away from the individual who's addicted to them, he's very, very sick. I've seen them. They call it the Jones disease or Jonesing. And they are sick. Trust me, they are very sick. Some of them have to be hospitalized. In the case of the alcoholic who withdraws abruptly, he will experience a lot of irritability, nervousness. If it's severe enough, he will have DTs, the delirium tremens. Some die. I know a young man right now not too far from here who's permanently disabled, I think. I'm not sure, but I think it's because he came off the booze cold turkey. So addiction means if you don't get it, you have unpleasant withdrawal symptoms. The reason I'm bringing this out is because we throw out the word addiction rather loosely. I was speaking to a congregation down in Georgia, and by the way, I'm going to try to make my remarks brief and open it up and let you comment and question. But anyway, I did this down in Georgia, and this lady said, I know what you mean. It's just like chocolate, isn't it? And I said, no, ma'am, you don't get arrested for driving while fat. So to me, I think we misuse that term. Addiction, as I define it, is a very serious situation. I'm an addict to alcohol, and I'm going to speak about alcohol. I think an addiction is an addiction is an addiction, but I know about alcohol, so I'm going to talk about that today. I haven't had a drink in 29 years and several months, but I'm still an addict. The experts tell me that I'll always be an addict and have to be very, very careful about what I put in my body. If I go to the dentist and they send home Percocet for a root canal, and believe you me, if I get a root canal, I want something. But we've learned through the years that Rose takes the medicine and doles it out to me because I'm not trustworthy. I have to be careful with that sort of thing. A lot of you have experienced this with friends and family, and I'm going to let you talk in a little bit. about this and throw it open, and please feel free to criticize and comment and question me. Wine in the Bible doesn't always talk about alcoholic wine, fermented juice, but most of the time it does. Some of our brethren, especially our ultra-conservative preachers, contend that all consumption of alcoholic beverages is a sin, and that the wine they're talking about in the Bible is fresh grape juice, and they point to scriptures that talk about the wine. It speaks of wine while still in the grape. That's true, but I think we can all realize that usually it's talking about fermented juice. It's got alcohol in it. I can't take the Bible. I know those. I've got a brother-in-law that can, but I can't. I can't take the Bible and condemn the consumption of alcoholic beverages on its face in and of itself. I can tell you it's dangerous. The percentages are all against you. Had a book years ago. I've loaned them all out. Called Addictive Drinking. This writer maintained that if you drink for a number of years, you're going to get addicted. He may be right. Whether or not he is right, the percentages are all against you. And I say, if the percentages with eating Big Macs were like that, you wouldn't eat Big Macs, because it's the risk just isn't worth it. At the same time, I can't condemn it in and of itself. Back to the point of the wine in the Bible usually being alcoholic wine. In John chapter 2, you recall the first miracle that we read about, where Jesus performed the wedding feast. You all know that story. And they ran out of wine, and they came to the Lord and said, "We got to have some more wine here. We're out." And he made wine out of water. Now, there are those who will maintain that this was grape juice. It was not. Because if you'll read further in it, they came to him later on in the feast, in the party, and said, "This is amazing. This wine is great." Most of the time, they'll serve the good wine first, and later on, after everybody's had a few drinks and their taste buds are dulled, then you bring out the starry stuff. But you save the best for the last. Clearly, that's not talking about grape juice. If you won't believe that, fine, I got no quarrel with you, but I don't believe that's correct. Then over in 1 Timothy, I think 5:23, when Paul is talking to Timothy, Timothy was sick. We don't know what he had, but he said, "Drink no more water, but take a little wine for your stomach's sake and oft infirmities." That's not grape juice, folks. There are doctors who still advocate small doses of alcohol for various ailments. Rose's granddad, Mr. Bob, I loved him to death. As he got older and his circulation was terrible, and the doctor said, "Take a little alcohol every day," helped him relieve some of his distress, open some blood vessels, and so forth. I can't do it. Some people can. Let's see what all I want to say. Let's talk about alcoholism itself. As I've said before, alcoholism, my definition, is an addiction to alcohol. What causes it? Lots of books have been written about what causes it. The simple answer is we don't know. There are races that are more prone to alcoholism than others, notably the American Indian. If you read the story of Meriwether Lewis and Clark, Lewis and Clark, the Indians were really worked over by smallpox, syphilis, and alcoholism. In addition to the white folks coming and shooting them and killing them, alcoholism played a big part because they are so prone to alcoholism. Eskimos, and they may be related to the same race. I read that the French are terribly subject to this. I don't know that, because I don't know. I know some Cajuns that are French and drink a lot of booze, and I'm told that they are subject to it. Jews are not very subject to it. It's strange. I went to school with a lot of them, and they all drink wine. But they're not. You don't see Jews in AA meetings, or I've not seen one. Families. We're told that that this tendency is inherited, but we've all intermarried so much with races and families that it's hard to pin this one down. My family, a couple of generations back, were full of it. My dad hated alcohol. My dad was a preacher. Never heard about this until I got to be an old man, but they were all alcoholics and drug addicts. My great-grandfather made his crop one year, sold his work team, bought booze, had a party, and died of an overdose. So our family was full of it. It really doesn't matter because nearly all of us nowadays have somebody in our families that are subject to this thing. We've just got to be careful with it. They tell me in AA I'm not supposed to recommend that people don't drink, but I'm sorry, I do recommend it. If you don't drink now and you've not had a drink, I would urge you not to do it. You don't know how you'll end up. You might end up like me. My dad said if I couldn't do anything else, I could serve as a horrible example. So that's what I'm here for today, to tell you, don't be like me. If you're not doing it, don't do it. Some characteristics of the alcoholic. Sickness of spirit. You may not even know that someone around you is an alcoholic. Only 5% of alcoholics end up on the street and on Skid Row, down on Lower Broad and so forth in the rescue mission. And that's 95% of us have families, go to work, go to church, play golf, sing in barbershop quartets, on and on and on, and somehow manage to limp along. We're cripples, but we manage to focus. The job is the last thing to go. We put up that big fake front and somehow manage to go. Families may not know it for a long time. Rose didn't realize. Rose chose not to realize all the bottles that were being carried out in the middle of the night that I was drinking them all. But we see this sickness of spirit. We see resentment, self-pity, self-loathing. I don't believe I've ever seen an addict that didn't hate himself. He may mask this by pretending to be the most important man in the world, but really down deep, he hates himself. We're told that the feel-good hormone is destroyed in the alcoholic and most of the drug addicts. Some of you pharmacists know more about this than I do, but I know some of the opiates and alcohol, the feel-good hormone is knocked out. The moral damage is severe. Along with the self-loathing, the loss in self-esteem, you become immoral in a lot of different ways. I kept looking for people lower than me to associate with, and finally there wasn't anybody lower than me to associate with. B, another thing that we see is rationalization and denial. This is a big one. I don't drink as much as Joe over here. I go to work every day. I still got a veterinary clinic. I don't go to it much, but I still got it. Denial. Somebody said denial ain't a river in Egypt, you know. This is huge because to be a good alcoholic, you've got to be a good liar. And I was the best. Let me tell you just a little bit. I don't want to go into my story. You don't want to hear how cute I was when I was drinking. But I finally made a call in 1983, August of 1983, to Alcoholics Anonymous. My family and my friends and the guys I sang with, they kept talking about my drinking. And I got tired of this, and I decided I'm going to make this. And I still remember that telephone number 30-something years ago, 298-1050. I called them, and here's my reasoning on it. I'm going to go to an AA meeting, and when they see what a fine, upstanding man I am, we're all going to have a good laugh. And those poor, pitiful people in there, it's going to be so ridiculous to think that my family could think I could be an alcoholic. Now, this in spite of drinking a fifth a day frequently, shaking in the morning so badly that I couldn't work, and I learned how to combat this. For a while, I would have a drink or two in the morning, and I could work, but I knew alcoholics did that, and I didn't want to be one of them. So I learned to go back in the surgery and hook myself up to the anesthesia machine for a little bit and suck in some of the halothane or whatever I was using and calm down a little bit. Finally, that got to be too much trouble, and I started using ether. And then finally, I started buying quick start fluid that you put in your cars to start it fast, which is just ether, and I'd put it on cotton and suck it in, and after a while, I didn't shake. If you struck a match, I'd have exploded like a bomb. Now, I tell you that to tell you, I'm still thinking I'm really not an alcoholic. Maybe just a little alcoholic. Now, I went along with this for a couple of years in AA. Oh, let me tell you about the grace of God. Let me tell you about the providence of God. I made this call to get Rose and shut up and leave me alone about my drinking. And a man agreed to meet me. I never met him. I didn't tell him I was a member of the church. I didn't tell him I was a preacher's boy. I'm a veterinarian, a member of the church, pediatrician, elder's son, met me and took me to my first meeting. You think God's providence is not alive and well? It is. My first sponsor was a member of the church over in Charlotte, Tennessee. So God is alive and well. Don't ever question that. And he helped me an awful, awful lot. Mood swings. That's a characteristic of alcoholism. Wildly exhilarated, on top of the world, or down in the depths of despair. I sang in a barbershop quartet, pretty good barbershop quartet. You may have heard us, if you're old enough, we did the Miss Grissom commercial that played on radio and TV for several years there. But they were always saying, we don't ever know what Tom is going to show up. And they didn't. I was either mad at the world or terribly depressed or hysterically funny. Life of the party. One or the other. And last but not least is physical damage. I was very blessed. My alcoholism hit so fast and furious that I really didn't suffer much physical damage. I didn't develop the wet brain. I didn't develop cirrhosis, organ damage. If at all, was very mild. So I was blessed along those lines. One other point I want to make, and it's so very important. By the way, I want to recommend a book to you. If you got friends and family, AA people don't like this book because it's not approved by Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's my favorite. It's called Dying for a Drink. Dr. Andy Spickert. Dr. Andy died a couple years ago in 92. He was at Vanderbilt. He lectured on this many, many years. Went to his seminar. He's Presbyterian elder and so very good. And if you got it in your family, I'd recommend this book, and no, you can't have mine. The last thing I want to talk about, and then I'm going to open it up and let you talk, is recovery. I had this happen to me, and I'm told that other recovering alcoholics have it too, that you're not drinking. Now what's the big deal? It is a big deal. It was a huge deal for me. It was many years before I had a serene, peaceful moment. I was constantly in a work. I was mad at the world. I tell people, as crazy as I was during the last couple of years of my drinking, I was a lot crazier off the booze because I had to learn to grow up in public. I had to learn to cope with the world, and I didn't know how to cope with the rest of the world. God was awful good to me. I had several people, my family, Rose. I don't know how Rose stayed with me, but she did. My preacher, Leroy Deadman, at Springfield, he didn't know what was wrong with me, but he knew something was wrong with me. And he kept on pestering me, and I finally told him, that I was an alcoholic, and I'd started to go to AA, and he took me to Dr. Spickard's seminar over at Vanderbilt and stuck with me closer than a brother while I was trying to get my brain working again. If you have this in your family, in your church, in your circle of friends, realize that just because they're not drinking, not because they're taking their medication, they're not normal yet. It takes a long, long time, and I recommend AA because AA got me sober. There are a number of programs, but that's the one that I used, and it's a special favorite of mine. I'm sure I've left out something, and I want to cut my part short now and open it up and let you talk and comment and criticize if I've said something wrong. Talk. Talk. You don't get to do this much on Sunday morning. Do it.
Why did you start drinking this Christmas?
Sorry?
Why did you start drinking this Christmas?
When I was in my 20s, just to be with other folks that did it, and I want to say this. I was a joke in my early years of drinking. They used to say, you can throw a rotten peach at Tom and he'll be drunk. I mean, it just took that little. And I said, I couldn't be an alcoholic because I have no capacity at all. And drunks drank huge amounts of water. Well, guess what? A few years later, I drank huge quantities. We were singing in Memphis one time, and I was rooming with the lead singer. And I don't remember it, but he says we broke the seal on a 1.75-liter bottle of scotch. And he got one drink, and the next morning the bottle was gone. I was the only other one in there, so I must have drunk it. So it is progressive. Now, I've heard people in AA talk about instant addiction. They were alcoholic the first time they drank, not me. I would go years, Davey, without a drink. I'd go back to church, you know, after I'd pull something stupid, and we'd all cry, and they'd say, if I can help you, well, let us know, and all that like we do, you know. And I wouldn't have a drink for a long time. Dr. Spickard says there's got to be a precipitating incident, there usually is, to tip the drinker over into alcoholism. That may or may not be true. For me, it was moving up here and going broke. I'd been successful pretty well. I was president of my state association in 79, 80. By 82, I was in a bad way. That's how fast it went. I worked hard at it, being a drunk, you know. Somebody else down. Rose? Yep. It is. And of course, I'm a veterinarian, and I remember one time when I wasn't drinking, but my nerves were all to pieces, and I started. I had my own tranquilizer. I'm a veterinarian. drug called Promazine. And I took some Promazine to calm my nerves. Not drinking. Before long, I'm taking 250 milligrams of Promazine a day. After I got sober, I counted it up and I thought, that's what I'd give a 1,000-pound horse. I took it every day for years and functioned. But Rose is right. It's easy to say, the doctor gave it to me. Y'all run into this? You got to be responsible for your own life. Somebody else had a hand up. Yep. And a lot of people think we drunks, we like the taste of alcohol. It really doesn't matter. My preacher friend up at Ivy Point, Jerry Carmichael, we were always joking, and he said, I don't understand if it tastes like dishwater. I mean, I said, yeah, but Jerry, some of us could pour it in a saucer and sop it with a biscuit. But it really doesn't matter whether you like it or not. You're drinking it because of the effect it produces, because it's your medicine. You got to have it. Somebody else.
So much in my head.
Go.
I remember when I started going out drinking on a nightly basis, I didn't like the taste of beer. But beer was cheaper than liquor. Beer was cheaper than those fruity drinks. So I drank beer. And eventually I got the taste. Like I started liking it.
Yeah.
But you drank it because it's cheap and you wanted the effect of what it's going to do.
Yeah.
I didn't think I was an alcoholic, but after I quit, and it'll be 5 years alcohol free in July this year, I thought, like you said, alcoholics wanted to drink all the time. I didn't have to drink when I got up in the morning. I didn't have to drink. I learned if you drink to get drunk, you drink to just, I don't know, when I started drinking, I didn't understand the concept of one or two drinks. I drank to get obliterated. I went in. Games or whatever I had to do, so I was going to walk out hammered beyond recognition.
Yeah. I'm off the cheapest thing I've got. Any of you know what PGA is? No, I'm going to have to tell you. Y'all ain't been on the streets. Good. PGA is pure grain alcohol. That's ethanol. That is 190 proof. I said, you know, vodka's just down in half. I'll leave out a bottle of that and make my own vodka. So I buy the cheap PGA, add water to it. And then after a while, I thought, what's this water all about? Well, I drink it real fast for it after. I mean, you really, really, really get crazy. It's just insanity. Old Boyce Hawkins, bless his heart, he fought it for years, and I think it finally killed Boyce. But Boyce always said it's a form of insanity, and it was for me. And people have been so very good to me. I don't know if you know Leroy Dedman. I preached at Springfield and all over the place. And he stuck with me like a brother. Because he knew how crazy I was, and he kind of rode shotgun on me and showed me that he is on my side. Somebody else. Don't be embarrassed now.
Is there something somebody in the family can do?
Get professional help. There are agencies out there. Number one, I'd get this book by Dr. Spicker, Dying for a Drink. I love it. I got it on my desk. And he deals, it becomes a family. The family gets crazy too. Rose did not want to admit that she had married to a crazy man. And I would get in the middle of the night and get all the empties out and put fresh ones in there under the cabinet. She never realized this was going on. She thought those big bottles stayed down there all the time. the family gets nuts. There's such a thing as an intervention, but it can be dangerous. Get some professional help. If you got somebody in your family, go to Al-Anon and learn a little bit before you go to these things. You might want to go to counselors, some doctors that specialize in this sort of thing before you tackle some of this, because I could convince you of anything. I was a great liar. I was sneaky as I could be. By the way, I never had a DUI. I told John, the reason I didn't have, I drove 12 miles an hour over on the right shoulder of the road so nobody would notice me. I had it figured out.
I should have tried that.
There are an awful lot of us that somehow manage to function in an awful state, but we manage to creep along. So you may be working right next to an alcoholic. You may be going to school with somebody. And you won't know it for a long, long time. I hid it for years. And then finally, it got so bad. And I tell people, I got so I really couldn't even get drunk anymore. I just got crazier and crazier until I'd finally pass out. And oblivion got to be my goal. Let's get out of this thing. Let's drink real fast and pass out. Admittedly, it's temporary, but it works for a little bit. Somebody else. I'm sorry? Families and friends of alcoholics don't want to face the problem. Nobody does. A lot of these deaths in these obituary columns that talk about heart attacks and so forth, a lot of them are alcoholism, because we don't want daddy to go down as dying of alcoholism. Somebody else. You're not talking as much as I thought you would. Going. Okay, thank you for listening to me. Not a word in the Bible, as far as I know, about extending the invitation. Not a word about an invitation song. It's a custom, but not all customs are bad. Some of these customs are good. I don't think there's anything wrong with setting aside a period during our worship period to make us think what the Lord did for us. Saved my soul, got me sober, gave me a good life. We're going to sing a song in a minute. I don't know you all well enough to know what kind of shape you're in spiritually. You got to do that yourself. I've been restored so many times I don't even remember. And He's taken me back every time. You may not have ever put on Christ in the first place. In Matthew, He said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, I'll give you rest." He will too. "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I'm meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your soul." Doesn't mean you don't have to work. You got to work harder than ever, but you get rest. A gift in sin that you've been carrying around. And a lot of you here are Christians. I'm assuming most of you are. And again, if you're in a bad shape, even though you're a Christian, He's still there for you too. And He's still saying, "Come back to me here, and I'll take care of you," and He will. Think about this, and let's stand and sing, Chief.